Have you ever like seen one of those crazy time lapses, where like a whole city block goes from totally run down to like this super modern space?
Yeah, those are pretty wild.
But it makes you think, what if your place, your business or whatever was right in the middle of that change? Could the government just like take it away? Like, even if it's totally fine, all because of some, greater good idea.
Well, that's a question that gets right to the heart of property rights in America. And that's exactly what we're diving into today, this super important case, Berman v. Parker, back from 1954.
Yeah, Berman v. Parker. It's like this case is basically the foundation for how cities even approach like all that urban renewal stuff right
Yeah,
now.
absolutely. It really boils down to the power of eminent domain. You know, that thing where the government can take private property.
Right, for public use.
Yeah, exactly. But this case, it really pushed the limits of like how far that power can actually go.
Okay, so just so everyone listening is on the same page, eminent domain is basically the government's right to take private property for things that benefit the public, right?
Yeah.
Like building a new highway or something.
Exactly. Think about it. Like you need to build a road, but someone's house is right in the way. It's for the greater good, right?
Right. So Berman v. Parker, it really put that whole idea to the test. So to understand this case, we need to go back in time a bit. It's post-World War II, and a lot of cities are dealing with like a ton of decay, especially Washington, D.C.
Yeah, lots of urban blight. It was a big problem.
So Congress steps in, right? They
Yeah.
pass this D.C. Redevelopment Act of 1945,
This was a huge plan.
a massive plan to like revitalize the entire city.
A total makeover, pretty much.
And it's important to remember, right? D.C. is kind of a special case, it being a federal district and all. So Congress had like way more power to make changes there compared to a regular state.
Oh, yeah. They wore two hats, so to speak. They were like the local government and the federal government all rolled into one. Their power over DC was like no joke.
So into this whole situation, enter our main players in this legal drama. We've got the owners of a department store, just a regular department store, and it's smack dab in the middle of one of these rundown parts of DC.
Yeah, you're talking serious blight. Like, over 64% of the housing around there was considered uninhabitable, but their store doing just fine.
Yeah, just chugging along, selling their goods, then bam, the government comes knocking. They basically say, "We need your property."
Part of this big redevelopment project. Can you imagine?
I'd be floored. So this is where things get really interesting, right? Because it raises this huge question. Can the government actually take property that's like perfectly functional, not causing any trouble, just because it's part of this bigger plan?
It's a question that goes way beyond just this one department store. And you know what? The Supreme Court, they said yes, unanimously.
A unanimous decision. Wow, that's got to be rare, especially for a case like this, right? It seems like it could be super controversial.
It was definitely a landmark decision, that's for sure. And it didn't happen overnight either.
So tell me, what was the legal journey like? How did this case even get to the Supreme Court?
So first, it went through a three-judge panel, and even they were like, whoa, this Redevelopment Act, it's powerful stuff, maybe too powerful. They upheld the act, but they tried to like narrow it down a bit, limit its scope.
But it didn't stop there, obviously.
Nope, straight to the Supreme Court. They
No.
wanted a final say.
Okay, so how did the Supreme Court justify giving the government so much power? Did they, like, just change the definition of public use to make it fit?
Well, they did kind of redefine it, yeah. But it wasn't like totally out of the blue. They basically took public use and said, hey, this also includes public purpose.
Public purpose. That sounds pretty broad.
It is. It opened the door for the government to tackle all sorts of problems, not just building stuff. We're talking poverty, blight, even like how a community looks overall.
So it's not just about whether something's working or not. It's about creating a certain kind of city, even if it means like stepping on individual rights a bit.
Yeah, that's the gist of it. And the court used some pretty strong language to make their point. Justice Douglas, the guy who wrote the opinion, he said, the concept of the public welfare is broad and inclusive. Basically saying, the government's got a lot of wiggle room here to decide what's good for the public.
Wow, that's a pretty powerful statement. So they were really shifting the balance of power towards like the legislature, the people making the laws.
Big time. And Justice Douglas, he even said, we do not sit to determine if a project is desirable, meaning the court wasn't going to second guess whether the government's plan was a good idea or not.
That's a huge change from, those classic eminent domain cases. Back then, it was all about like clear public needs, roads, bridges, that kind of stuff. But Berman, it really broadened the scope of what the government could do.
It did. It's like they said, hey, we trust you, legislature, to figure out what's best for the community.
So if they can just claim something is for the public purpose, doesn't that mean they could, like, take any property they want?
That's the question, isn't it? And it's one a lot of people were asking back then and still ask today. Where's the line?
Yeah, it's a little unnerving, right? Like, what if your little shop is in the way of some fancy new development? Poof, it's gone.
Well, that's where the concept of comprehensive planning comes in. The court basically said, look, we're not going to get into these nitty-gritty arguments about every single property.
Okay, so no fighting over every little piece of land.
Exactly. They were thinking big picture. Like, you can't design a city by arguing over each individual lot.
Makes sense. But I'm still stuck on this idea that they can take property that's not even, like, causing problems.
Mm-hmm.
Did they give any guidance on when it's actually okay to take non-blighted property?
They did say it can't be just any reason. It has to be necessary for the plan to work, not just convenient or like, oh, this building is kind of ugly. It has to be crucial.
So like if a shop was blocking a main walkway in a new development, getting rid of it might be truly necessary, even if the shop itself is fine.
Right. It's all about the big picture. Now that brings us to another tricky part. What about private developers?
Ooh, yeah. That's where it gets like extra controversial, right? The government takes your property and then some private company gets it. Feels a little icky.
Definitely raises some eyebrows. And you know what? The court didn't see it as a problem. They said, look, private companies can be tools to help achieve public goals.
So like they're the ones actually doing the building and stuff, but it's ultimately for the good of the public,
yeah,
even if they make a profit.
That's the idea. Public-private partnerships, they called it.
Man, this stuff is complicated.
Yeah, it's messy. And it gets even messier when we start looking at what happened after Berman.
Right. Because this case didn't just, like, disappear.
Mm.
It had ripple effects, right? Cases like Hawaii Housing Authority v. Midkiff, and then that super controversial one, Kelo v. City of New London.
Berman opened the door, and those cases walked right through. But we'll get into all that in the next part of our deep dive.
Ooh, I can't wait. Listeners, stick around. We're going to keep unraveling this whole eminent domain saga. It's a wild ride.
And it's not just history. This stuff affects us today, too. So stay tuned.
Welcome back to our deep dive on Berman v. Parker.
We're really getting into the weeds of how cities can change and, well, what happens when your property is part of that plan.
You know, last time we were talking about how Berman kind of opened the door for the government to take property, even if it's not like falling apart for the sake of some public purpose.
It's a powerful tool.
Yeah, super powerful, but also like kind of scary, right?
Yeah.
What are the limits? Where do you draw the line? So let's dig into that. Like, legally speaking, what were some of the big constitutional questions that this case brought up?
Well, one of the biggest ones was this whole idea of using eminent domain to benefit private developers. See, back in the day, eminent domain was usually for stuff the government was doing directly, like roads and schools, public stuff.
Right, right.
But Berman was different. They were taking property and then potentially giving it to private developers to, you know, rebuild and stuff.
Wait, so they could just take your house and give it to, like, some big corporation? That doesn't seem right.
A lot of people thought so, too. But the court said, hold on, the goal here is to help the public, even if private companies are involved. Their logic was, sometimes you need private developers to get things done, to actually make those changes on the ground.
So it's not about who owns the property at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. It's about the benefit to the public.
Exactly. It's like, think about those toll roads. They're built by private companies, but they're still serving a public need, right? People need to get around.
Yeah, okay, I see that. So private developers,
yeah,
check. But what about this whole public use thing? Like, yeah, the Fifth Amendment says the government can take your property for public use. But does getting rid of blight really count as public use?
That's where the court's broad interpretation of public use really comes in. They weren't just talking about physical stuff like roads and buildings. They said it's also about making communities better, you know, healthier, safer, even just looking nicer.
So getting rid of blight, making things prettier. Mm-hmm. Those are public uses now.
In the eyes of the court, yep. They said blight isn't just an eyesore. It can lead to crime, disease, all sorts of bad stuff. So fixing those problems, that's a legitimate reason to use eminent domain, they argued.
So they were basically updating the Constitution for, like, modern city life. I mean, cities in the 50s were dealing with stuff the founding fathers probably never even imagined.
Yeah, totally. It was a different world, and the court was trying to figure out how to apply these old rules to new problems, trying to strike that balance between individual rights and what's good for the whole community.
I get it. It's tricky. But, okay, here's what I'm still struggling with. What about those properties that aren't blighted? Like, in the Berman case, that department store, it was doing just fine. How can they take something that's not even part of the problem? It just doesn't seem fair.
It's definitely the part of Berman that people get the most fired up about, and it's a tough one. But the court said even non-blighted property can be taken if it's necessary for the overall plan to work.
Necessary? Who decides what's necessary?
Yeah.
Seems pretty subjective, right?
Well, yeah, there's definitely some wiggle room there. And that's what critics of Berman really latched onto. They said this gives the government way too much power. They could just declare anything necessary and take whatever they want.
Like, what's stopping them from taking my house to build, like, a giant parking lot?
That was the fear. But the court said, look, we're not going to micromanage every single plan. They basically put a lot of trust in the legislature, the folks making the laws, to do the right thing.
So they're trusting that the government won't abuse this power.
Pretty much. And that's a big part of the whole debate around eminent domain. How much do you trust the government to make these decisions? Some people say you got to give them this power to fix problems. Others say it's way too risky. They could easily abuse it.
It's a tough one. On the one hand, you want to believe that the government will do the right thing. But then again, the idea that they could just take your house because they have a better plan, it's scary, man.
Totally understand that. And then there's the whole question of compensation. Even if they can take your property, they have to pay you for it, right?
Yeah, the Fifth Amendment says just compensation. But what does that even mean? Is it just like market value, or is there more to it?
That's a great question. And it's something courts have been arguing about forever. Just compensation isn't always so simple. Sometimes you have to consider things like, you know, sentimental value, what your business is worth, how much it'll cost you to move. It's not just about the price tag on the building itself.
So it's not just about cutting you a check and saying, see ya, they have to actually make it right.
Exactly. The Fifth Amendment protects property owners even in these kind of situations.
Okay, that makes me feel a bit better.
Yeah.
There are some rules, some limits on the government's power.
For sure. And those limits got even stronger after cases like Kalo v. City of New London, which we'll talk about next. That case, it really blew the whole eminent domain thing wide open.
Kalo, that was a big one. Everyone was talking about it.
Yeah, it really pushed the boundaries of what the government could do, and it sparked a huge backlash. We'll get into all the juicy details in the next part.
Can't wait. Listeners, hang tight. We're going to unravel the whole Kalo saga and see how it all played out. All right, welcome back for the final part of our deep dive into Berman v. Parker. We've been talking about, like, how much power the government has when it comes to changing cities and, you know, what happens to your property if it's in the way.
It's a story about, like, balancing those big public goals with individual property rights.
Exactly. And now we're getting to the really controversial part. We've mentioned these cases, Hawaii Housing Authority v. Midkiff and that super famous or infamous one, Kalo v. City of New London. These cases really took what Berman said and, well, pushed the limits.
They definitely did. Hawaii Housing Authority v. Midkiff, that was back in 1984, and it dealt with this, like, crazy situation in Hawaii. You had a tiny group of landowners who controlled, like, most of the land.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah, so, like, regular people had a really hard time buying homes, and prices were through the roof. So the state of Hawaii, they said, enough is enough. They passed this law, a land reform law, that basically let the government take those huge estates and sell them to the people who are already living there, like as tenants.
Whoa, that's a pretty big move. Like, the government just steps in and redistributes the land. Did that even fly?
It did. And guess what? Berman was a big reason why. The Supreme Court, they leaned hard on Berman, especially that whole public use idea and the fact that courts shouldn't second guess the legislature. They said, hey, giving more people a chance to own homes, that's a totally legitimate public purpose, even if it means taking land from those big landowners.
Okay, so Midkiff seems like, you know, a pretty direct application of what Berman said, even if the situation was a little unique. But then we get Kalo v. City of New London in 2005, and that's the one that really blew things up.
Kalo was a total game changer. It got everyone talking about eminent domain. So, picture this. You've got this waterfront neighborhood in New London, Connecticut. Kind of rundown, needed some love. And the city, they had this big plan, a redevelopment plan to bring in like a hotel, a conference center, offices, you name it. They wanted to revitalize the whole area.
Sounds like a typical, you know, make the city better kind of project. What's the controversy?
Well, here's the thing. Some of the properties the city wanted to take, they weren't blighted at all. They were people's homes, like regular folks living in their houses, taking care of them, no problems, and they didn't want to sell.
Hold up. So the city wanted to take perfectly good homes, not because they were run down, but because they were in the way of this, like, economic development project.
Exactly. And people were outraged. Like, how can the government do that?
Yeah, it does seem like they were stretching that public use idea pretty far.
For sure. But guess what? The Supreme Court, they sided with the city. And guess what case they cited? Yep, Berman. They said, look, creating jobs, boosting the economy, those can count as public use too, even if it means taking property from people who don't want to sell.
Wow, that's a really broad interpretation of public use. Like, almost anything could count. It makes you wonder, could they take my house to build a, I don't know, a giant shopping mall just because it might create some jobs?
That was the fear a lot of people had after Kelo. It sparked this huge national debate about property rights. Like, if the government can just take your home for some vague economic benefit, where does it end?
Sounds like Kelo really exposed, like, the potential downsides of what Berman had set in motion.
It totally did. And people were not happy about it. It led to a ton of changes, too. States started passing laws to limit the use of eminent domain, especially for those kind of economic development projects. It became much harder to justify taking someone's home for, like, a shopping mall or something like that.
So Kelo was like this correction, this pushback against Berman's expansion of government power.
Exactly. Berman gave the government more power, and then Kelo led to this wave of, like, whoa, hold on, maybe that was too much power. It shows you how legal decisions can have these, like, ripple effects, unintended consequences.
It makes you wonder if the justices who decided Berman ever imagined that their decision would lead to something like Kelo.
It's like a legal chain reaction, you know? It shows how the law is always evolving, always being tested and challenged by real-world situations.
So where does all this leave us today? What's the state of eminent domain now after all these legal battles?
Well, we're in a more, like, cautious place. Courts are a lot more hesitant to let the government use eminent domain just for economic development, especially if they're trying to take homes that aren't causing any problems. They're paying closer attention to individual property rights.
So it's more balanced now, less tilted towards the government side.
Definitely. But the debate's not over, not by a long shot. There's still that tension between what's good for the public and what's fair to individual property owners.
Well, that wraps up our deep dive into Berman v. Parker. We've gone through, like, decades of legal history, and it's clear that this case is still shaping how our cities change and how we think about property rights.
It's amazing how one case can have such a lasting impact. And it really gets you thinking about the balance of power in our society. Who gets to decide what happens to our communities and how we protect those individual rights?
Exactly. And that's what we love to explore here on The Deep Dive, those big questions that shape our world. So thanks for listening, and keep those legal minds sharp. We'll catch you next time.